Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
This is SiriusXM Progress. I'm John Fugelsang. Welcome to the love fest that is Tell Me Everything. Coming at you live and interactive for the next few hours here on Channel 127, where we put the day's programming to bed and get you just angry enough to get up the next morning. We got a lot to get to tonight, as I'm sure you know. The Justice Department is going to pay $180 million in legal settlements for its failure to properly investigate years of accusations against Michigan and U.S. gymnastics Dr. Larry Nassar. Yes, the Justice Department is going to pay $180 million for what this rapist did because the FBI didn't believe women when they told them. You and me, in the form of our tax dollars, will be paying $180 million in legal settlements through the Justice Department because the FBI was filled with men who don't believe women. That's the real headline from today's story about Larry Nassar. Pro-Palestine protests are growing at Columbia University and other prominent schools around the country. At NYU, up to 90 students and faculty were arrested at an encampment. Another encampment has sprung up at MIT. This has been a lot of fun. Hearing people say that these protests are the greatest evil. I really do know a Republican friend who said this was the ultimate evil in society. Not 32,000 Palestinian civilians killed, half of them children. Not starvation used as a deliberate weapon of war while you are murdering the World Central Kitchen volunteers that you are coordinating travel for. No, protesting this. Protesting this. Not the atrocities of Hamas, not the atrocities of the Netanyahu regime, a bunch of privileged, spoiled college brats protesting obnoxiously the regime. I'm sorry, aren't these First Amendment warriors the same people who were screaming when Charlie Kirk wasn't allowed to go on a campus and say anti-Jewish shit and Ben Shapiro wasn't allowed to go on a campus and hate on women? But we can't let people go on campuses and say things we disagree with. Guys, if someone threatens somebody, then arrest them, expel them from school. This is not the story that is more important than the actual war. We're paying billions of dollars to bomb Gaza into an ethnic cleansing, desolate wasteland that Jared Kushner can turn into beachfront housing. We're spending billions to kill these people. We're spending millions in relief against the onslaught of our billions. And our media is obsessed with how some bratty college kids are going too far in their protests. H5N1 avian flu, now discovered in cattle at 32 dairies across 8 states, and traces of the virus has been discovered in both raw milk and pasteurized milk supplies. I keep telling you, kids, with your drink milk directly from the cow udder challenge, I know it's fun on TikTok, but it's not safe anymore. The joke's over. Kids aren't really doing that. I don't know if you heard about this. This Palestinian baby was saved from the womb of a mother killed by an Israeli strike in Rafah, where they told everyone to go because it's safe there, and now they're bombing Rafah. This woman was in her home, and she was killed, and her husband was killed, and her 4-year-old were killed. And the baby inside of her was almost killed. But at 30 weeks, it was delivered by a C-section and is in intensive care right now. Seconds after this baby's mother and other members of her family were killed, She was saved from the womb. Also, a Canadian man was vacationing in Cuba and died while swimming with his daughter, and the family received the wrong body. That's a great story. Oh my God, this family in Quebec, their dad dies and they receive the remains of a 20-year younger Russian man with hair and tattoos. Not their dad's corpse. Nothing funny about that. Also, a Russian court rejected Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich's latest appeal. The Justice Department, we already mentioned, $138.7 million to settle these misconduct claims. And Nancy Pelosi has said that Netanyahu should resign. Also, four Germans were arrested over the weekend in Austria for celebrating Hitler's birthday. Four were arrested for celebrating Hitler's birthday. Meanwhile, thousands of Americans are celebrating Confederate History Month right now. Let's do a show. Let's begin, because today is the day of the pecker jokes. But before we get to day of the pecker jokes, Joe Biden mocked Donald Trump today over a certain infamous suggestion he delivered at a White House briefing exactly 4 years ago, that maybe the COVID-19 virus could be treated with an injection of disinfectant. Now, again, Trump never said drink bleach, liberals. It's not fair for y'all to say that. I've been defending this man for 4 years to the day. He never said drink bleach. And you shouldn't need to exaggerate, because what he did say is equally freaking stupid. Here it is in the time capsule 4 years ago tonight. We were talking about this.
Brian.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask Bill a question that probably some of you are thinking of if you're totally into that world, which I find to be very interesting. So supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light. And I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way. And I think you said you're going to test that, too. Sounds interesting.
We'll get the right folks who could.
Right. And then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see it gets on the lungs and it does a tremendous number of the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. So that you're going to have to use medical doctors with. But it sounds interesting to me. So we'll see. But the whole concept of the light, the way it kills it in 1 minute, that's pretty powerful.
Dr. Deborah Birx said in 2022 that this was a tragedy on many levels, and she wishes she had spoken out. Jonathan Carl said it was the craziest and most surreal moment he had ever witnessed in a presidential press conference. Donald Trump's comments prompted the maker of disinfectants Lysol and Dettol to issue public statements warning, under no circumstance should our disinfectant products be administered into the human body. And earlier today, the president of the United States tweeted, "Don't inject bleach. And don't vote for the guy who told you to inject bleach." And Mr. President, honor compels me, sir, to say you are a liar. Donald Trump never said inject bleach. He said put ultraviolet light inside the body and inject disinfectants. Words matter, Mr. President. And if you're going to have these scurrilous attacks on Donald Trump for saying incredibly stupid shit he never said, I will call you out by citing the incredibly stupid shit he actually did say. Thank you very much. Let's John, talk about the day that... Yeah, hey, everyone. It's our producer, Chris Hauselt.
I just want to make sure everyone pays special attention in that clip to the moment he says disinfectant, every cameraman in the room starts clicking
it
away.
Did you notice that, too? It's beautiful. Oh, we should play it again just for that beat. It's as soon as he says it, you
please
hear it's like 1,000 typewriters come to life on their own. Let's play it.
Thank you very much.
We got to skip ahead.
A question that probably some of you tested. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or...
No, you really can't bring the
in
light
some other
inside
way
the body through the skin.
And I think you said you're going to test that, too. Sounds interesting.
We'll get the right folks who could.
Right. And then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute. 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that?
It's like we got one.
Oh, it's beautiful. Here's the exact moment the president said this thing. Fantastic. Well, today he didn't get to talk too much in the courtroom, but the man who now faces 34 felony counts of falsifying business records to hide a payment to a porn star. Oh, it was the sixth day of the hush money trial, the, of course, campaign finance fraud trial. And a certain famous former media executive took the witness stand to testify about how he used the National Enquirer to help Trump in the campaign. David Pecker was part of the catch and kill conspiracy to kill any stories that could hurt Donald Trump's presidential campaign. And we learned today his actions included planting fake negative stories about Trump's opponents and killing any story, true or not, that might have hurt his campaign. So let's get this part over with, America, so I can get on with my show. Show me your Pecker jokes. Whip them out. Come on. I want to go ahead. Reveal your Pecker jokes to the world. I've been hearing them all day. Did you go near a computer today? Oh, my Lord. Pecker was up today. Donald thought he had this Pecker in his pocket. Pecker screws Trump. Pussy grabber, stop by Pecker. Trump's Pecker leaks. Donald Trump wants to cut Pecker off. Trump is getting grabbed by the Pecker. And at the end of the testimony, they wrapped the Pecker for today. Folks, it was a great day for the single entendre. Pecker said what his company did was checkbook journalism, where they pay people who bring them exclusive stories. And in the summer of 2015, right after announcing his fated candidacy with paid cheerers in Trump Tower, Donald Trump had this meeting with Pecker and Michael Cohen at Trump Tower, and they hatched what prosecutors are calling brilliantly the Trump Tower conspiracy. I think it's brilliant because the jury is made up of New Yorkers, and New Yorkers hate that freaking building. So the whole point of this conspiracy was to watch out for any damaging stories about himself and hide them from the voters of America. It was election fraud. Now, before 2015, Pecker had never bought a story about Donald Trump, so he could not run it. He had bought stories about Trump to run them before. And he also confirmed in his testimony he hadn't engaged in any catch and kill schemes prior to his dealings with Trump in 2015. He said, when I say mutually beneficial, writing positive stories about Trump and covering the election and writing negative stories about his opponents will only help newsstand sales. So to me, that was my incentive. It was going to benefit his campaign, and both parties benefited. And he was saying that he knew back in 2015 that Trump had been dating a lot of women, even though he'd been married to you-know-who for 10 years at the time. But he said in his testimony that Trump was known as the most eligible bachelor in 2015. Married Melania, 2005. So keep that in mind. So the Enquirer's parent company, American Media, they said in 2018 they paid $150,000 for Karen McDougal's story, Playboy model who hooked up with Trump for a year. And that's called love. In 2018, this guy Pecker was granted immunity in exchange for providing the feds with information about the Karen McDougal payments. So you knew going into this, it wasn't going to go well. American Media admitted it helped arrange the payments to Karen McDougal. And so they're stuck. It's election interference. So this was a guy cooperating with feds. And it was a very dramatic day because, you know, Trump hadn't seen the old Pecker in years. He laid out the scheme. He talked about the network of actors around Trump at all times. He talked about how it all validated Michael Cohen, laid out the motivation. He wanted to protect the campaign from embarrassment. It was not about protecting Melania Trump from painful information. It was keeping information secret from the American voters so they wouldn't know it when they went to the polls. He confessed on the stand to conspiring with Donald Trump against Hillary Clinton during the 2016 election. Steve Bannon would feed the Pecker negative stories about Hillary, and then Michael Cohen would send him negative ideas for articles about Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio or Ben Carson. And the Enquirer would take Michael Cohen ideas and embellish them and then put actual stories out there. Articles like Ben Carson left sponge in patient's brain, Ted Cruz shamed by porn star, family man Marco Rubio's love child stunner. And he would send drafts of these articles to Michael Cohen before they were published to make sure it was okay. Now, this goes back to the campaign in 2016 when Ted Cruz was furious that the National Enquirer was running stories about him and all of his affairs. Remember the Cuban mistress crisis? Cruz said back at the time, this smear that has come from Donald Trump and his henchmen, all of which started with Donald Trump. He called out Trump and the Inquirer for lying about him in print. If you don't remember it, it's because Ted Cruz vociferously endorsed Donald Trump and has spent the last 8 years lovingly licking his boots, or 6 years, 5 years. So that was what it was. I mean, Donald Trump smeared Ted Cruz's wife and his father, and Ted Cruz doesn't care. He's a soulless opportunist. So Donald Trump is slamming the media as fake news, but we got testimony under oath today that it's him and David Pecker creating the fake news. They had a fake news machine, and it was created to hide information from American voters. Pecker made a deal with Dino Sajudin. That's the doorman who was selling the story that Donald Trump had had a baby out of wedlock with someone who lived in the building. And Pecker said he didn't believe it, but he paid him $30,000 for the story. And Cohen thanked him and said Trump will be very pleased about this. And Pecker said, if this story is true, it would be our biggest selling issue since Elvis Presley died. But they made a deal to catch and kill negative stories. That story wound up being fake. But if it had ever come out, the debate alone might have influenced the election. And again, Pecker said he would have run the story that Donald Trump had a love child outside of his marriage, which is significant because it establishes the idea that the stories were not published prior to the election to help Trump win. They all came out after the election. They found this story to be untrue. They paid for it anyway, because if some other trash tabloid runs the story, it could hurt Trump's campaign. Pecker wanted to have an exclusive on this, but Cohen said wait until after the election. And so they did. It was a conspiracy to keep information away from the American voters to win an election. He laid out how he and Trump worked together to publish these fake stories about Trump's opponents. I mean, I can see why this guy went for immunity with the feds. At the time, Donald Trump said, and this is the beautiful part, he actually said the week of the Ted Cruz cover about all the women, which Donald Trump's henchmen planted in the Inquirer. He said, I have no idea whether or not the story about Ted Cruz in this week's National Enquirer is true or not. I had absolutely nothing to do with it. I did not know about it. I have not as yet read it. I have nothing to do with the National Enquirer. And unlike Lion Ted Cruz, I do not surround myself with political hacks and henchmen and then pretend total innocence. Ted Cruz's problem with the National Enquirer is his and his alone. And while they were right about O.J. Simpson, John Edwards, and many others, I certainly hope they are not right about Lion Ted Cruz. When he said those words, he had planted the story himself. So it was quite a day. And I'd like to remind our well-intentioned cable news people, I know it's awesome trying to discuss this with this man's name. I know it's awkward for you guys. I know. Please, though, if you're talking about a man named David Pecker, I want you to know, as a comedian, if you try to make it more dignified by referring to him on camera as Mr. Pecker, that actually makes it funnier. You don't need to say Mr. Pecker to make it sound more gruff. Mr. Pecker is the name of my dark animated script. All right. Don't. They made it very clear this whole thing was about one thing, the campaign. It wasn't about protecting his marriage or his family or his brand, like the lawyer said in the opening. It was about winning the election. The conspiracy is the crime that elevated the lying about business records from a misdemeanor to a felony. And this dude was only the first witness. We still have to hear testimony from Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal and Hope Hicks. Donald Trump's going to get convictions here, folks. He will not go to jail. He will be convicted before the convention. Now, I thought the testimony was very interesting. Most of the hype today went to the arguments over the gag order. Donald's lawyers tried to insist he didn't violate it, even though he was attacking witnesses in front of cameras for the last week. Prosecutors pointed to 10 different times when Trump violated the order. Trump keeps on pushing the limits of this guy because Trump wants to go to jail. Because if he goes to jail for 30 days, they got to stop the trial. And that's all this is about. He's trying to set the whole thing on fire. Judge Juan Marchand told one of Trump's attorneys, you're losing all credibility with the court. I only went to public school, but I think that's bad, right? If the judge says to your lawyer, you're losing all credibility with the court. Trump keeps accusing the judge himself of violating his constitutional right to free speech. Trump's calling a kangaroo court. He's calling for this judge still to recuse himself. He is trying so hard to tank this thing, to get a mistrial any way he can. It's very ominous for a judge to say to your lawyer that he's lost all credibility with the court. So in closing, I hate days when I say the best line of the day belongs to Mitt Romney. But folks, the best line of the day belongs to Willard Mitt Romney. Here's a clip earlier.
Made their own assessment of President Trump's character, and so far as I know, you don't pay someone $130,000 not to have sex with you.
There you go. Thanks, Mittens. Classy on the way out. And by the way, everyone's talking about how much David Pecker's testimony is going to hurt Trump. Can I just say, no one's mentioning how much this will hurt the credibility of the National Enquirer. Pecker was granted immunity by the DOJ. Michael Cohen did time for this crime. Trump should have been charged with federal crimes for this conspiracy. The court is not in session on Wednesday. The prosecutors will resume their direct examination of Mr. Pecker on Thursday. Folks, all kidding aside, this was serious. Donald Trump thought he had this in the bag. He thought he had bribed his way to immunity and safety. But today, a 77-year-old man was revealed in open court to have lost all control of his pecker. And there's nothing funny about that. We'll be right back with Professor Corey Brettschneider. This is SiriusXM Progress.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So a majority of the Supreme Court appeared today like they were going to be upholding a series of local ordinances that allowed a small Oregon city to ban homeless people from sleeping or camping in public spaces. It looks like they're going to scale back some homeless rights decisions handed down by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals over the past 6 years. The justices were pretty split along ideological case lines in this case. I know, shocking, right? But this is going to have huge implications for how other states and municipalities will be treating the poorest of the poor among us. I am so pleased to welcome back to the show one of the best guests we have ever had, and he has been so generous to us with his brilliance over the years, Professor Corey Brettschneider, who has been writing amazing analysis of our politics for Politico, The New York Times, and Time Magazine. I highly recommend his book, The Oath and the Office, A Guide to the Constitution for Future Presidents, at your favorite bookstore. Also, the new Penguin Liberty series on free speech, impeachment, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg's Notable Cases, People of Earth. Welcome back, Professor Corey Brettschneider.
Thanks, John, and thanks for the compliment. And sorry I missed last week, and lots to catch up on.
No worries. I want to talk about your new book, too, while we have you here, Professor. But I have to begin by asking you about this very long argument that happened today with the justices over the homeless debate. I mean, as someone who's grown up in New York City, you know what it's like to wonder, why doesn't our government do more? This was an example of a government trying to help with these people and getting pushback from other sources. What's going on in this case, and what do you think is really at stake here?
It's a case about the Eighth Amendment and whether or not the idea that cruel and unusual punishment that really punishes people for being homeless, whether that is a kind of status discrimination that court has said in the past, rightly, that, for instance, in the case about drug addicts, that being having the status of a drug addict can't be punished. It's one thing to punish somebody for buying drugs or but to actually be addicted to drugs, that's not something that you can be punished for. And the idea, I think, is such a fundamental one in understanding the most basic right of our Constitution, which is that nobody is punished because of their birth or because of conditions that they can't control. And in England, the punishments were often doled out by monarchs in order to try to show that subjects were lower and that kings were in complete control. And the idea of the Eighth Amendment is exactly the opposite, that we're all citizens, and if we do wrong, that's one thing, we can be punished. But you can't be punished because of your status. And the idea in particular is that if you're homeless, beyond your control, and there's really no space that you can occupy, you can't be punished for occupying some space. That's the idea that these litigants are trying to defend. And yeah, it didn't look good in this court, but I think what an important idea. In some ways, it's equally important to winning and to the policy to just keep this idea alive that you shouldn't be punished for being homeless.
It's so true. I mean, I think the leaders among us would say, Corey, homelessness is obviously a symptom of a greater problem, not the problem itself. What is causing all the homelessness, and how do we address homelessness at the symptom? I think mediocre people would just ignore it and play dumb about it. And I think the worst people among us would say, how can we punish the most unfortunate right in our midst? I mean, Justice Kagan was asking the city's lawyer, could you criminalize the status of homelessness? It seemed kind of like the conservatives wanted to bunt this back down and let individual municipalities handle it, which might be the right way to go. But it seems like John Roberts doesn't want to have to make a call on this, whereas the more progressive judges were asking real pointed questions about homelessness itself as a status under the Eighth Amendment.
Yeah, I think the liberals on the court, Kagan especially, is making a simple point, which is that you can't punish somebody. We have basic obligations to people. And if we're punishing them for being homeless, not just providing them with the necessary needs that they have, but actually going further than that and penalizing them for lacking access to basic needs, that really is cruel under the meaning of the Constitution. Now, the conservative pushback to that is, well, who's going to be, okay, it's one thing morally to say that, but who's going to be in charge of providing the goods to avoid homelessness? That I think they're worried in their libertarian instincts, which are really a huge part of what's going on with the conservatives on this court, is a sort of hatred of government programs, government obligations, and especially government obligations to the poor. And I think what they're worried about is the creation of a positive right to not be homeless, so that the government would have to provide shelter, for instance. To my mind, like, yes, government should provide the basic needs of people, and they see that as the ultimate threat.
Boy, that's what unites all these good, deep, faithful Catholics, isn't it, Corey? A shared indifference to we the people doing anything to elevate the status of the least of us.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the dialogue that we used to have about poverty, Lyndon Johnson's, of course, war on poverty, Jimmy Carter's, demand for a decent society. The Reagan era, in some ways, began wiping that away, and things have just gotten worse over time. And unfortunately, I think the Democratic Party hasn't made poverty as central as it should be. Biden had done some important work with the tax credits for child care and did a lot temporarily to reduce child poverty. But yeah, we're not putting it front and center in the way that we need to. In this case, I think, is a reminder of how bad things can get, that you get punished for having nothing.
Well, you know why that is, though, Professor? Because poor people don't vote.
I think that's right. Yeah, and homeless people certainly don't vote. They're lacking access to their basic needs. And in many cases, it's just not feasible to think they're going to make it to the polls. And that means that the rest of us are obligated to defend their interests, and we're not doing it.
I mean, we demand that drug addicts get treatment, but we don't want to provide health care. We demand that mentally ill people get therapy or get treatment, but we don't want to provide the health care. We say get a job so you can get a home, so you can apply for a job and have an address, but no one's going to hire somebody who's homeless right now. So we just have this contingent of us who will just say, well, these are, you know, bad people who made poor choices. I mean, I swear, Corey, the Sackler family will be billionaires forever, and all the people that got hooked on opioids because of them will be homeless. It's just, this seems like the way the system is. I was so heartened to see some of our judges standing up for the concept of basic decency under the Eighth Amendment when dealing with these American citizens? Because, you know, the media talks about homeless people like they're objects.
Right. I think one of the powerful things about having a case that you and I and others could use to try to get Americans to think again about our obligations to the poorest people in this country is, you know, you start to see the facts of people who lack options and who are facing police forces who are frustrated. And rather than a municipality like this one in Oregon figuring out how to provide for basic needs, instead they just resort to the criminal justice system. And, you know, there's a really unfortunate parallel in the 19th century, which is that after the end of slavery, there was a desire to bring slavery back, but it was impossible to do it legally. So what did they do? They criminalized status, homelessness, vagrancy.
That's it.
They call it.
Vagrancy laws.
And we're still seeing that, I think, that 19th century really return to slavery. And the whole point of the Eighth Amendment, again, I mean, it'll come back to the fundamental concept here, is to combat a world in which there are masters and slaves, and to instead create one in which there are citizens. And that's not one in which you can be punished for occupying space. That's really what the argument is about here.
Yeah, I thought it was actually very moving when Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson was comparing sleeping in public to eating in public. You wouldn't go after someone because they were eating their lunch in public, and yet some people can't afford to eat in restaurants in public, so they eat in the park. I mean, you and I, Corey, would probably never get arrested if we took a nap in a public park. This seems like a way to go after the poorest people in society and harass them for something that a seemingly housed person like you and me can do with impunity.
Yeah. And, you know, the case forces us to ask the question, where should these people go? What space are they supposed to occupy? And you could say, well, they should be richer.
But yeah, that's always the answer.
That means nothing. And that is what we're, as a society, we're saying that there is no place on earth that these people are allowed to occupy. That's what this case is about. It's such a powerful moment for the Supreme Court to take it up. It reveals, you know, one ideology that is really indifferent to suffering, and I think to the basic idea of anti-cruelty in a democracy, that we don't subjugate people. And another side that's, you know, in the minority, but just trying to speak up for decency. And
that's it. You're either trying to help these homeless people, or you're complaining that there's too many of them spoiling your public outdoor spaces.
Right. And it really does. You know, the majority in this case, I think, is a little, you know, not as crude as you hear people who insult the homeless or lack any basic respect for the dignity of all people, including homeless people. But they're not that far off, because they're really denying government's obligation to, and again, not just to provide shelter, but to not punish people for something that is so beyond their control. That's the absurdity of this case. I it's probably, you know, going to be 7-2 in the libertarian direction. I think it should be unanimous the other way. I mean, how could a decent court allow punishment of people for something that, you know, is as simple as existing?
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree. And I want to say, before any angry conservatives call and yell, yes, I know that there are homeless people who exhibit criminal behaviors. Yes, I know there are homeless people who break the law. But
that's,
we're talking about how are you still going to preserve the rights of American citizens who might happen to be homeless while also keeping society safe. I mean, I know we all agree if a homeless person is breaking the law, harming someone else, by all means, throw them into the criminal justice system. But maybe we could talk about how we can prevent some of that clogging up our courts by having fewer homeless people in the first place.
Right. And it's not, I should say, too, you know, one answer that we'll hear from libertarians is, well, there's private charity. And in Oregon, there was a church, for instance, that would take some of these people in, and they didn't want to go there. But then you start to look at what was required, and there was proselytizing, and you shouldn't have to abandon your basic First Amendment rights to believe what you wish in order to have your basic needs taken care of.
But in many cases, people are forced to actually have to sit there, and before you get the food, but first, a word from our deity.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And, you know, that shouldn't be the alternative. And again, going back to the constitutional point, which is why we're in court here, the whole idea was supposed to be that you weren't subjugated. and subjugation, the choice of being homeless or being subjugated by religion in a religion that you don't share and beliefs that you don't share, subjugated in that sense, you know, that's not a choice that, that any American is supposed to face under the Constitution. And homeless people are part of our society. They are still citizens. They don't lose their citizenship because they've lost their job. And this case is supposed to be about the vindication of that dignity.
Amen. Hey, speaking of dignity, let's talk about Donald Trump's trial in New York. It's good to have you back, Corey. Today, of course, was the day of 1,000 pecker jokes. And I wanted to talk to you about this last week. I'm so glad you're back, because obviously this is not as serious as the other cases. But that doesn't mean it's not a serious case in and of itself. And I have to be honest, Professor, I'm every day finding this more and more fascinating.
It is fascinating. I think, too, you know, there was a lot of controversy. This is obviously the least serious of the cases. You know, January 6th, the insurrection, the two cases about that, the attempt to disrupt the Electoral College in the Georgia case, the violation of the Espionage Act in the Florida case. Those are up there with the most serious crimes. Now, this one, at first blush, looks a lot less serious. It's about falsification of business records. And a lot of the debate was about, well, in order to bump it up to a felony, they had to name an underlying crime, falsification of business records. For what purpose? That's what everybody's asking. What's the underlying crime? And the worry was it was some sort of minor tax campaign finance violation under New York law. And now what we're seeing as this case is unfolding, it's fascinating, is no, the DA had a much more serious claim. It's falsification of business records in conspiracy to disrupt an election. And the pattern that's being shown here isn't one check being written by Michael Cohen. It's that over and over, Trump was engaged in these illegal acts to try to hide from the public and to use money that he was not going to disclose, even though he was supposed to, because these are campaign expenses. To bury all of the terribly damaging information about who he was. So that's pretty interesting, right? That it's not just one act; it's lots of them in furtherance of a conspiracy to really manipulate this election in a legal way.
Now, what do you make of the repeated violations of the gag order? Because it's clear he's doing it. He knows he's doing it. His lawyers don't enjoy getting yelled at for it, but he's going to keep on doing it. It seems like he's trying to have any kind of chaos or steer it into any kind of mistrial or even get himself some kind of sentence. I mean, I don't think he'll ever do time in court, Corey, but there are those saying that the judge could assign him jail time and then just stay that sentence until the end of the trial. What do you make of all this? I found that the talk of the gag order got more attention in our media today than the details of the testimony itself.
Yeah, that's a worry. I mean, and remember, Trump is very good at controlling our attention and disrupting us, baiting the judge into a battle between the two of them, making that demeans the judge. It makes him more of an equal, and it takes away from the focus of what I'm trying to what we've been focusing on until now, which is the idea of, you know, a conspiracy to disrupt this election illegally. If he can control the news cycle, then he wins in a way, and I think he has. The problem is that he is so openly defiant of the judge's order. The lawyers are a crucial thing here. So they have been arguing, of course, that retweets or what does Musk call it now, that instead of a retweet, a repost is not the same as a endorsement. And, you know, that the judge said, well, what's the case law on that? And they said, well, I don't know. It's common sense. The judge doesn't share that. So he's getting very frustrated with Trump's lawyers on a number of dimensions. And you know, I think the possibility, right, that he'll have to sanction him. And what that punishment will be is up to the judge. And I think he's savvy enough to know that if he imprisons Trump in the middle of the trial, that's going to be the story. So I do like that idea of staying the punishment. Financial punishments could, you know, also be possible. So he's got to be creative here. And the thing that he's so skilled at, this judge, is moving the trial along. I guess it was yesterday, had to end early, and there was a lot of speculation they wouldn't even get through opening arguments. And they not only got through opening arguments, they started getting into witnesses. And this trial is moving pretty fast. And
yeah,
that's, I think, all praise due to this judge for seeing Trump's technique of stall, and not letting him do it. So I think this, you know, the people who look the worst here are Trump's lawyers, and this judge and the prosecution is looking pretty good, despite a lot of skepticism, not just from Trump allies, but from Trump opponents. And I think they're being vindicated here.
Absolutely. One last question on this whole thing. How significant is it that David Pecker essentially got immunity in 2018? I mean, he's has 6 years to craft this narrative with Alvin Bragg's team. This was not going to be a good day for Donald Trump any way you looked at it.
No, the witnesses here are the whole case, and having Pecker, having Michael Cohen together, that's a powerful combo, because you really see this isn't a one-off check that was just written. It wasn't Cohen deciding he's going to take care of one random issue on his own. No, it's a pattern and a conspiracy of ongoing manipulation of the election. And this is turning out to be a great case that was hidden from the public, I think, for good reason. As they prepared it, they didn't name that underlying crime. But now that we know what it is, this doesn't look like some frivolous case about business mm-hmm. records. It's about much more than that. It's as the others are, about American democracy.
One final note. The new book from Professor Corey Bretschneider is The Presidents and the People, Five Leaders Who Threatened Democracy and the Citizens Who Fought to Defend It. It's coming out officially July 2nd. I hope we can book you for an interview when the time comes. Congratulations on Publishers Weekly giving you a rave.
Yeah, thanks so much, John. And it's a big moment, because bookstores look to that publication to see what they're going to stock and what they're going to promote for the summer. So, the review was great, and they awarded it a star, which is their highest praise that they give, and it's a good start. So thanks so much.
I mean, Bretschneider savvily articulates how the structures that enabled Nixon to remain largely in place today, and also offers captivating insight into how subsequent administrations recovered from each crisis. The result is an invaluable breakdown of present-day concerns in an illuminating historical context. I cannot wait to geek out on this book with you, Professor. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Really a pleasure.
Thanks, John. Always.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And Corey, are you still on Twitter? Can we still follow you on the Twitter machine?
Yes. I'm at Bretschneider C, reposting and posting.
Thank you so much, Corey. It's really a pleasure. Welcome back. We have to take a very quick break. We'll be back in just a moment with your calls. We are at 866-997-4748. This is Progress.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We are back on the night of 1,000 Pecker jokes. Because of course we are. I'm John Fugelsang. This just in, the Senate has approved $95 billion in foreign aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan by a resounding bipartisan vote. That legislation is going to go straight to Joe Biden's desk. Now, it's also got the other bill that requires TikTok to divest from the Chinese parent company ByteDance within 9 months or face a ban, neither of which will ever happen. That all now goes to Joe Biden's desk. Let's get excited about that. You know what I'm excited about? Frances Callier and Angela V. Shelton, two of the funniest women I have ever worked with, two of the funniest women I've ever watched. They first met back at Second City, and they have, as the insanely funny and scathingly brilliant comedy duo Frangela, been regular pop culture pundits on CNN and Dateline and Don Lemon's show, Showbiz Tonight. They are part of the Sexy Liberal Save the World tour. And of course, this Saturday night, we're playing at the Fillmore in Philly with Glenn Kirshner and Lindy Lee and JoJo from Jers and Tal Sparks and Steph, too. You have to listen to their podcast, The Final Word, and The Idiot of the Week as well. I don't know when these women find the time to think up all these brilliant thoughts, but I'm so glad they do it for the rest of us. Frances Callier and Angela Shelton, welcome back to SiriusXM.
Thank you so much for having us, John.
Thank you for being had. Let's get this out of the way. What, for those who don't know, for the uninitiated, what is the Final Word podcast?
The Final Word podcast is all the news. Let me tell you something. It's all the news we think you need to know. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's we're like the funnel through which the news goes so that you don't have to watch the big news. You can just listen.
That's right. That's right. If I have a diet, an unhealthy diet of corporate news, the only thing that's going to keep me from a diabetic coma is fortifying that diet with the Final Word podcast.
We're like
absolutely.
Yeah. I understand.
And the other thing about our podcast is that you're going to hear some perspectives that maybe you aren't, that isn't in your diet. Okay.
That's right.
Yeah. Ours.
And what we also hear from people over and over and over and over again is, you got me through that with humor and laughter and insight. And so I'd like to just toot our own horn about that.
I listen, you guys got me through the pandemic. I mean, the short videos that you were making and seriously, and the humor and the way you guys can take whatever is the most unpleasant thing out there in the news at any given time and make it hilarious instantly is, I think, the noblest thing political comics can do. And you all make it look easy all the time. It's so fun to watch your sets and see an audience catch on fire because they can't believe how fun you guys are. I mean, I said earlier in the show, you are like, you are really the Abbott and Costello of brilliant, outspoken, funny black women.
That is the best compliment ever.
There you go. And by the way, if Abbott and Costello had been beautiful, funny black women, they would have been great. They just never would have gotten anywhere in TV and radio in those
days.
So I'm glad you're here when you're here.
You know, it's so much fun to do what we all do and to speak the truth to power. And do it in a fun, artistic, creative way, the ways that we all do, you know, and you know, the stuff that you did during COVID, it's so amazing and artistic and beautiful and rich.
Beautiful.
And it's just so lovely to see you dig down into, you know, we hear your jokes, but to dig down deeper into you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. There's not much in there. It's pretty shallow. You don't have to dig too deep.
No, it's fantastic.
Well,
beautiful.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Oh, stop. No, say more. I have to ask, you know, do you guys find it challenging to keep the material about Trump fresh? Because I keep hearing comics say, oh, I don't like talking about Trump anymore. I can't do it. And I kind of feel that's bullshit. I understand if you're tired or fatigued of the issue, but if it's affecting our democracy and if there's some kind of malfeasance, dishonesty, or rank fuckery at play, I sort of feel morally compelled to make fun of it.
Yeah, I feel like if you're drowning, you don't get tired of saying help. You know, like, and we're drowning. Like, we can't watch this car wreck happening and not try to stop it, not try to stop people from running into it head first. So I agree with you. I think it's a cop out. And I also think the reality is the thing about Trump is that he always surprises me. I mean, people who say they're not surprised, I wish on some level there must be some peace in that. But for me, I every day I'm like, he really is committed to this crazy.
Same.
Like I keep expecting a different route. And I'm telling you, the man gets me every time.
I mean, on Pecker Day, like so much in Pecker testimony that I'm like, holy crap, Trump, you really are that stupid. And Trump didn't pay him back for Karen McDougal. Like,
of course he didn't.
Yeah, it's the same old story, but it's new in terms of how incredibly dangerous, risky and stupid he really can be.
And here's the other thing that I don't think that enough people are acknowledging. Everybody looks at the Stormy McDaniels moment. Right. Yeah. But Karen McDougal and he had a relationship.
Yes, they did.
That was long term. And yes. she had feelings. Whoa, feelings for Donald.
Yes.
Trump.
She's a deep lady. She did. That was a whole year and a year. I mean, that's in Trump dating years. A year is like, you know, two marriages. Right. That's impressive.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
in playmate years, that's
a eon.
Yeah,
think of all the sugar daddies she could have seen and tried to land in that year, and she put them aside to be with Trump.
And so, you know, there's a lot here, you know, that to act like in this moment, but you know, to answer your question about comedy. And yes. And utilizing what's here, you know, I think that there are two types of or several types of comedians.
Okay.
And there are the types of comedians I think that Angela and I are. We are conduits. Okay. I am not sitting here saying necessarily, you know, that it is my will. We're improvisers, right?
You are.
So we are not forcing our will on the material. The material presents itself to us. And then just like Michelangelo looking at, I'm going to go there.
Yeah, go
looking
ahead.
At a block of marble.
Mm-hmm.
We say the David presents itself to us.
Like so many great artists before you, the impulse does not come from you. It comes through you, like Michelangelo,
right.
Like Shakespeare, like Woody Allen. It doesn't matter what conventional morality says about something. If it feels right, you go with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like there might be something in there objectionable, and I'm just not.
I think
no,
so.
I mean, I'm saying, like, you are not slowed down by the conventions of polite society, like Shakespeare, like Army Hammer. You go with what feels right in the moment. You're
Army
pure artist.
Hammer.
Right,
there's just a little.
Ew.
Oh my gosh.
You know,
he's like a concierge at some hotel in Bermuda or something, or the Bahamas.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Wow,
that's a really hard fall. Like, just for cannibalism, did he deserve? I mean,
when you come from a family of billionaires, I think he'll land on his feet somehow. But it's a lot to swallow. I agree. Let me ask. You mentioned improvisation. I always wonder this when I'm watching. How much of your act is structured, and how much of it are you guys actually finding the laughs there in the moment?
That's because a it seems secret. Like that's you know what you
no,
know like the KFC. All right. Okay.
I think you know where your finish line is and all these bits.
32 spices. Okay. Herbs and spices. Let me tell you, we can't tell you the mix. All right.
I'm convinced you guys know what your button is. You know what your ending point is and you work to that. Angela, jump in and help me a little bit here.
Yeah. It seems I would say, you know what? This is the thing. We like to read the room. Okay.
Yeah.
We are well-raised American women, and we understand that when you're in a room, you got to read the room, be appropriate, be a little bit shocking perhaps, but you know, we definitely play a lot, and I feel like every show is an opportunity. You know, at Second City, what the way that we write a show is we maybe have a vague idea, you know, but you go out and you improvise it, and then you keep improvising it, and then eventually you write it. And so for us, material is never done. Right. It's never done. It's always being shaped and it's always being molded. So we may talk about an issue in one part of it, one show, and then the next show we'll be like, OK, well, let's try this other part of it. And so we do definitely have material that is set, but we stay true to the moment. So like if something's working, generally
keep working
when we perform,
it.
Yeah. When we perform, we tell the people on the lights, it's like after this period of time, the big laugh you get go out on that, because the reality is we're finding, we're playing. And so, and we're trying to be responsive, especially with this new, our news now, things happen, things change, you know, by Friday of a week, you're looking at a different situation.
It's
and
true.
So it's important to
completely
be able
new
to,
stories.
Yeah. To be able to incorporate that.
I mean, some of my Second City improv teachers, you know, always said it's like jazz, that there's no mistakes, that if That's one right. player makes a mistake, the other player makes it work. And I see you guys do this all the time, where you build on each other's laughs and let you instinctively know when it's time for the two of you to shift and change topics and move on to something new. I mean, are you having fun with this Donald Trump trial? The fact that it has to do with a porn star and a man named Pecker, notwithstanding, are you having fun with this trial?
We have been saying, take delight in this. Savor
yes.
it. Let
Stop
it roll
smell the train
around
wreck.
On your tongue.
Stop
what?
And smell the train wreck, people.
It's like a delicious piece of chocolate in my mouth, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even like chocolate.
No, enjoy every moment and more stuff. Like, I never thought, you know, John, I never thought that I could love the justice system. Like, I never thought I'd look forward to trials or to dealing with the justice system in this country. So for me, as a Black person in America, I'm like, ooh, savor it. Now, of course, he's still being treated like some sort of special creature. And I'm really hoping on this night of nights that our judge is saying to himself, you know what? He's got to go to jail. This is contempt. I'm hoping that.
Yeah,
I don't have a tremendous amount of confidence in it.
I'm hoping. I don't think we're getting
because that's what would happen to us. First of all,
that's what would happen. Yeah, that's what happened to me.
Yeah,
I did pitch to Professor Brettschneider in the last hour. Maybe the judge would impose jail time and then have a stay on it until the trial is over, because Donald Trump would love to go to jail, because 30 days stalling the trial, that's all his efforts
that's
are
right.
for. The judges are in a tough spot. If they give him jail time, they're kind of giving him what he wants, and he'll fundraise like hell off it.
That's not the point of the legal system. None of this stuff is supposed to be gamed out, right? It's like you commit a crime, they charge you. Like, you don't say stuff, well, this client, this perpetrator doesn't want this, so let me not do it. That's already treating him different. The reality
is,
if he's supposed to go to jail, go to jail, and we will deal with it. Whatever it is, we will deal with it. The system is set up to deal with it. We will deal with it. It's just this idea that it matters. Like this idea that they're trying to, I can't get my mind around this question. Why do you have Secret Service protection? Why are you entitled to that when you tried to overthrow the government that provides
Thank
it?
You.
Like, I am trying to get my mind around this discussion of how hard it's going to be to have Secret Service protection in jail. Why does
Why
he have a right to it?
Why should he get briefings?
Thank you.
Yes.
As the nominee, after we know he stole classified documents and showed them to unqualified people, why are we going to give him more?
Because we are afraid to say no.
But I don't get it.
And,
because we would figure it out with anybody else. If this was Obama... No,
that's right.
Oh.
I mean, they would have figured out how to put Obama in jail just so
he wouldn't be free now. He wouldn't be free now.
On GP, they would have figured it out. This is my issue here. You cannot have someone threaten someone with a threat and not be able to come through on it. Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
We've all seen the third season of The Wire. Or the fourth season of The Sopranos. Pick one.
Oh,
okay.
Third season of The Wire.
Telling you.
Where the dude ran for mayor. Hey, I have to ask you this question. As you guys know, there's one thing that all conservatives are at war with each other. We've seen it. Divide and conquer is great. But you've got the MAGA faction and you've got the Republican faction, and they hate each other. There's one thing they can agree on, and that is the importance of free, pure, unfettered, 100% free speech on college campuses. When Ben Shapiro or Charlie Kirk want to come speak at a university, by God, there's one thing the Almighty God himself cares about, and it's the free exchange of ideas, even if they're controversial. on college campuses as long as it's not brown people or Muslims doing it. So help me God. Isn't it delightful to see people calling out the National Guard? That people really want to see the National Guard come to college campuses? I think it's because they want a sequel to Kent State. I think they know exactly what that statement means, and they love some fresh blood. What do you guys of this seeming gap in the right-wing devotion to free speech at colleges?
They don't care about free speech. What they want is consequence and reaction free speech. I'm so sick of this being labeled as a free speech discussion. Free speech means the government stops you from speaking. When that's don't want to hear you speak, that's called taste and discernment. That's not you being silenced.
The market decides.
Thank you. Canceled means people don't like your act. That's what it means. And I don't know why these people don't recognize that, but people have the right to protest in this country. They still do. And if, just because you don't like it, you don't like it. I don't like it.
Let me go even deeper. And yes, and with you, Angela, this is about the white paternalism of America. And what Fox News is stuffing is angry that the children aren't doing and believing what daddy, what white rich daddy says to do. So they, and they ain't never like that. They didn't like it in the 60s.
Yeah.
Okay. They don't like it now. And so what their issue is that how dare you give voice and give support to the Gazan voice. That's because this is not our POV.
That's it.
And how dare you, these children, I watch Fox every day. These children, they say, they don't know politics. They don't understand.
No,
they don't understand what's going on in the world. But here, our children do understand. 34,000 dead.
That's it. They told us we didn't understand in the 80s when we were protesting apartheid. They told us we didn't understand this culture's allowed to have the society they want to have. And you kids with your rallies and your Nelson Mandela concerts don't get it. It's the same thing.
It's the same thing. These are adults. And the idea that they are not familiar enough with the world. I'm sorry. They grew up in a world where they had to hide under their desk and have live shooter drills. I think they are very familiar with the violence of this world. I think they are aware of the issues of this world in this country. And the idea that you get to tell them, as Francis said, paternalistically say to these adults, when I have to watch a 9-year-old black kid get called an adult, don't tell me these kids on these campuses are an adult.
And again, if someone is threatening a Jewish student or a Muslim student, if they are threatening them, throw them out of school, expel them. If someone hurts someone else, then arrest them. Bring in the cops all you want. We are not supporting crime and lawlessness. But I've had conservative Christian relations on my Facebook say some of these people are pro-Hamas. And I'm like, you're the ones talking about free speech all day long. Are they blowing people up? If not, they're allowed in the country we've agreed to live in. To be pro-Hamas, as despicable as that might be, I happen to think being pro-Netanyahu is equally despicable because he propped up Hamas to preserve his own power. Sorry, please.
Thank you. And this is that was just my point I wanted to make as well, which is how are we, the conversations we need to learn to have respectfully in this country is being Netanyahu's government is not anti-Semitic.
That's right.
And that also, and I do believe, and I'm not saying, because I have tons of friends who are Jewish who have said to me, I do not feel safe. My child doesn't feel safe on a campus. Mm-hmm. And this is a conversation we have to have as Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Which is my Jewish neighbor is an American. And that because I am having an issue about what's happening over in Israel with that government, I cannot transpose onto my neighbor the feelings I am having about the injustice there.
Wait, you're saying if Vladimir Putin is evil, I shouldn't take it out on my Russian neighbors? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
If the Iranian Ayatollah government's evil, I shouldn't take it out on my Iranian neighbors? Is that what you're saying? Yeah,
that's exactly what I'm saying, John.
I think that the issue for me, I've never felt safe a day in my life. Like, and I think that I don't want that for anyone, but I do think we have to have that discussion and talk about what does it mean to feel safe and what, you know, and I think as women, you know, like it's that safety is a luxury in this world. It is not an item that most people, and I'm talking poor white people there. It is a luxury. And that's true. It is not something that's available to a lot of us or maybe most of us.
That's why I support, I don't just support gun ownership. I think guns should be free for women. I only think women should be allowed to own AR-15s. Men have proven they are the gender we can't trust with that kind of hardware.
It's true.
It's true. I hate to say it, but it's true.
Ladies, let me ask
you
a question.
Maybe you could work up to it. You know what I'm saying? Maybe you could work up to it.
I think men have a long way to go to earn the right to have AR-15s. Earlier today, I was talking to Shaniqua McClendon, who's the editor at Vote Save America and Crooked Media. And we were talking about the media's favorite narrative that people are really, really down on this choice. You know, people really don't like it. It's between this old guy and that old guy. And I mean, aren't they basically the same? Donald Trump rapes people and Joe Biden thinks women should have control of their own bodies. Aren't they just haven't we just jumped the shark with both of these lunatics? Ladies, what is your advice for people who are hearing all this and maybe feeling a bit confused about where they should vote with this election coming up?
It's simple. It's really simple. I want you to ask yourself, who do you trust? Who do you trust to not hurt you? Who do you trust to care or think about you, to acknowledge you, to know your name, to utter it? Who do you look around you and ask yourself, where am I today? And make a real assessment of what's happening in the world and all of the things that have actually happened in this administration and the one before. What I can tell you is, when you look at Joe Biden, is not a compromise. He's an incredible president. And I'm going to tell you, I was not excited. I was voting for Elizabeth Warren.
She was not excited.
I was voting for Elizabeth Warren. I was really unhappy about it. But when I got told black people, this is what we're doing, I heard it and I understood. And he was right. Mm-hmm. He was right. So we did it. We called each other, my black people. For instance, we all called each other and went, we're voting for Biden, aren't we? And then we're like, yep, we are. And yep. I am so glad I did. I look back, like, this man has done so many things. Nobody's ever addressed childhood poverty.
I know.
Like, nobody in any substantial.
And he showed that when we want to, we can make it the lowest it's ever been for a full year if we make the choice.
And for very little money. Why didn't the economy die? Because they gave us all $1,200. Like, it's so, when you look at what this administration has done and is continuing to do with everything, school, you know, debt, in keeping lands, natural resources, all this. Now I'm stumbling because there's so many good things I want to all come out of my mouth at once. But the reality is, this is a great presidency, and feeling, don't let the media tell you what you feel.
Oh, you know, baby, ain't that the truth? And let me tell you this on top of that. The truth is, you got one choice, okay? There's one thing. You can go in there in that kitchen and you can open that refrigerator all day long. I don't care how many times you open it, there ain't gonna be nothing but Biden on the inside of it. And let me tell you, nothing but Biden.
Yes.
Chock full.
Someone told me that they.
About it.
Someone told me maybe I'd like some RFK Jr. Can I have some of that?
No, we ain't got that. Because I don't serve poison. You know,
no.
Like, we're not gonna. Seriously, that is like handing people botulism. You don't.
Biden's the only thing on the menu, is what you're saying.
On the refrigerator door, we got some condiments called Harris.
They're delicious.
I'm allowed to have
clear,
those.
That's
huh?
like me saying, if you're into meat, filet mignon, and if you're not, the most delicious vegan dish possible. Like, it's, you know, these are
I,
not
I
this
honest.
Is not some consolation prize.
I tried some Cornell West in the late 90s and I was really impressed. What if I want some Cornell West?
No, he's lost it. He's crazy now. It got left outside in the sun and it's curdled. That happened.
We tried to vacuum seal it, but it just didn't work.
It was too late.
There was a hole in it.
So I'm having Biden. I get it. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you want to live.
Enjoy
your meal. This is the thing. I'm sitting up here and I'm like, how did we get through? Our industry stopped. And everybody stopped for a period of time, really.
That's
but
right.
Our industry is just sputtering back a little bit now. And like the idea that somehow we made it through that, I cannot get out of my head who to thank for that. And that's Biden, Joseph Biden, and Kamala Harris. Like, there's just it's just
I agree. And they don't get enough credit for it. I mean, it was 4 years ago today that we hit 45,000 dead. And Donald Trump announced in all caps that America was reopening with still over 1,100,000 Americans left to go. Yeah. Biden is the reason why we got vaccines in arms in rural America, in the inner cities for rural white people. They had a plan to distribute this vaccine. And we're not losing a 9/11's worth of people every day anymore because of this guy. The part of me that loves comedy leans to Trump. The part of me that loves America and not being a dick leans to Biden.
Absolutely. I'm not worried about people voting for Biden. I'm really not. Trump has never won the popular vote. He's not going to. But what I'm worried about are the people who are set up to make it a problem, the people who are set up to try to not validate this election and to try to take away our rights. And
that's right.
That is the thing. When I look at the judge tonight, Marshawn, I want to say, you know, you need to treat this person like you would treat any of us.
Amen. That's why we have to have a huge turnout. And that's why we are doing the Sexy Liberal Save the World tour.
That's right.
I am so thrilled that we are going back to Philly. The last time the three of us were in Philly, Stephanie Miller was almost killed. And it was the weirdest show we ever had. We are due for a big, big homecoming. What is the best way for our listeners and our evil army of the night and all of our day walkers on the podcast to follow Frangela individually and together, please?
You can go to Frangela.com. You can find out all about us. You can go follow us as Frangela Duo on Facebook, Twitter, and the Instagrams. Woo, baby.
TikTokies for as long as we got that.
Yep.
Guys, you are the best. Thank you for inspiring me. Thank you for making me laugh. It is a joy and an honor to be on a tour with you anytime. And for the last, what would it be, 7 years we've been doing this? It's just been a thrill. You guys have made me funnier and a better person. Thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. And I'll see you in Philly this weekend.
See you in a minute.
Quick break. We will be right back with your calls at 866-997-4748. This is Progress After Dark.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm John Fugelsang. This is Progress. Let's go to the phones. Reverend Sandy is on line two. Reverend, I'm so grateful you called today, especially with the Supreme Court hearing this case on homelessness. Welcome. It's good to have you.
Hey, John. It's great to be with you.
Hey, Rev.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a lot about, or a little maybe, about homelessness and the solution to homelessness. Everybody buckle up. The solution to unhoused people is housing. What?
Yes.
What?
Yep.
But the problem is we have this 100-plus-year-old model that doesn't work anymore. where we say, oh, you have to get sober and you have to follow rules and you have to be here by 6 p.m. and you get to sleep in a room on a bunch of hammocks with a bunch of other snoring people who might steal your stuff. Or,
yep.
You know, it's like the people are like, well, people don't want to go to shelters. I'm like, have you been to a shelter? They're awful.
I've been to some terrible ones.
It's like camp, only worse. Yeah, me too. And, you know, as a minister of a church that cares, you know, I've spent a lot of time in shelters with people and feeding. And also one of the churches I served had a weekend obligation to sort of supervise the homeless population in the shelter. And as kind as you are, as many movies as you can play, as whatever it is, it's still not conducive to mental, emotional, or physical health.
No, you're not safe.
And so,
you're not in many shelters. You are not safe. Your stuff is not safe, and people live in a constant state of anxiety.
Exactly. And I wanted to mention the name of someone who would be a great guest for you. Let me be your producer for a second. And his name is Kevin Nye, NYE. Mm-hmm. He's Christian, but he wrote this book, Grace Will Lead Us Home. And he opted out of church, formal church, because he wanted to be doing something rather than just being in church. And so what he does is his work is to reach out to unhoused people on the streets and help them into a continuum of, you know, dignity and respect and healing. And he's just amazing. He is so unorthodox in the way we all think about unhoused people. And he's just a font of information and stories, and he's very inspiring. And so I wanted to sort of tell you about him and everybody who's listening. Kevin Nye, NYE.
Kevin Nye.
He's on the X. He's on the X.
Okay. And, we still call it Twitter in these parts, but go ahead.
I know. What do you do? So that's, I wanted to talk about that, because I feel like we dehumanize our unhoused siblings so quickly.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's really, how are you supposed to live? Like, I think you and Professor Birchneider were talking about, like, the human body takes up actual space in the world.
Yeah.
The human body needs to eliminate waste. The human body needs to be fed, and the human body needs, you know, a safe place to be. So, it's ridiculous that we're where we are.
Reverend Sandy, I agree with everything you said. And a couple of years ago, I made this movie for PBS, and we spent a lot of time in Detroit. And Detroit, according to their own records last year, they had their first ever report on homelessness from the city, and they identified 8,500 homeless in Detroit, and there's 78,000 abandoned houses in Detroit. They call them abandominiums. And of course, because that's the culture there. People live in these empty houses. And I'm like, well, why should they not? You have thousands more. You could give every homeless person three houses in Detroit right now.
Yeah.
And honestly, there is a system in place where we can start to house people and then at least give them some safety and dignity and privacy. And they can begin to try to
make resumes. And a toilet and running water.
Make resumes, be able to have an address when they fill out a job application and start to rebuild their lives. We can do it if we have the will to. But of course, as I said earlier to Professor Brettschneider, the poor don't vote. And there are no lobbyist groups on behalf of the homeless. No one's getting bribed to help the homeless, so nothing's moving.
Right. Oh, my God. That's right. Quickly, I was in Detroit last week, and I met this woman, Reverend Faith Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
And she is building she and her church and all the board members and volunteers and everybody who's part of her nonprofit are building a neighborhood. They've reclaimed this neighborhood in Detroit. And over the past 30 years, she's been doing this for 30 years. She has slowly, slowly built up this neighborhood, and they want to put a grocery store in. They're learning how to do grocery store right now.
Amazing.
They're not
Amazing.
Sure how they're going to do it, but she has a housing project that's a bunch of small houses that are being built in different, because that neighborhood was torn down. A lot of the neighborhoods, as you know, have been torn down. So yes, they're building these small houses for people, and it will only be a portion of their for their Social Security until if they live there for 7 years, I think it is, or 8 years, they become owners. And they and it's, so she's building not only a neighborhood but a community, and it's just brilliant. It was really inspiring. Wow. Yeah, everybody's like, "Why'd you go to Detroit?"
Because Detroit's wonderful, and everybody should go to Detroit, and people should say nice things about Detroit because it's a great American
city. Detroit is fantastic. It is, and they have the best art museum in the world. And
actually, they do.
Anyway,
you're right.
So that's, they do.
Oh, yeah.
And I went to the opera, and oh, my goodness, had a wonderful time in Detroit.
Nice.
So anyway, homeless people are people, too. Yes, thank you, John.
Much.
Have a good night.
Yeah, seems like the sort of thing a Christian would espouse. Thank you, Reverend Sandy. We are at 866-997-4748. That is 866-997-GRIT. Let me go to Lynn in Nevada. Hi, Lynn. Thank you for waiting on hold. You're on Progress.
Hi. I love your show.
Thank you. I'm on.
You are such a godsend. You know,
let's not get carried away now. I have my moments, but come on now.
I just got hip to you, and I just love you. You just so
thank you.
Okay, just let me. You know, sometimes I think us as people get a little conceited about homelessness.
Yes,
you know, a lot of us are just a paycheck away, a fire away,
one broken down car.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so when they say homeless, they think, oh, they're the lower of the lowest. They drug. That's not true. We have teachers, you know, on the street.
We have families living in cars.
Absolutely. And you know what really got me? We were during 2008, we had to get rid of our home during that terrible, you know, and excuse me, because I'm getting a little emotional.
That's okay. I'm so sorry. Please, go ahead. Tell me what happened. I'm honored you would call and share this with us.
You know, we weren't homeless because we have family, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Thank God.
I really can't get this out. I'm so
That's okay.
Sorry.
You don't. You do not have to. You've shared a lot already, and I don't doubt that you went through incredibly painful times. Tell me this, Lynn. Have things begun to get better? Has it felt like you've been coming out of the darkness that we all went through? And has it been a time of healing for you to some degree?
We bought a new home. We're, you know, life is good. You know, health challenges get old, but everything is good, you know.
Good.
But
thank God.
Thank you. I just want, there's so much we can do for the homeless. I feed homeless people. When I drive on the street and I see a homeless person, I come home and I cook for them. That's all I can do. I mean, I can't take all of them in.
No,
and I need to say, oh, you're homeless because of this or that. But we all need to care for each other.
And people who live in cities, you know, I mean, my son is growing up around homeless people all the time. And, you know, you either learn to do what you do and help where you can help, or you force yourself to be blind to it. And there's always going to be people who are saying, well, you're going to give that guy a dollar, he's going to go spend it on drugs. And then I've got to say, well, so what if he does? Then he's going to get himself fixed tonight. He's not going to go suffering and you know, get the shakes in a bus stop, and he's not going to rob some old lady for her dollar. He got my dollar, and maybe he'll be one day closer to going to a goddamn meeting and turning his life around. But I'm not going to not give someone a buck when they're in need, because I doubt where the money's going.
And that too, when you give from your heart, it doesn't matter what they do with it.
Yeah, that's true.
And you know what really pissed me off? I used to live in California, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when we sold our home, we were looking for a rental temporary, and everything was so high, and they want you to make three times the rent, and your credit score has to be 6. So I actually called one of the property management, and I said, do you understand that the place that we're trying to move into, the average income annually is $25,000? A year. Want them three times the rent, and most of them are elderly and retired. And she said, yeah, well, it's like that across the state. I was pissed.
Wow. Wow.
So that's going on. And, you know, rent control, all that, you know.
No, the design, the system is designed to keep people in poverty. The system is designed to make it as hard as possible for people who are shackled with poverty to ever be able to climb out of it. It is rigged that way. But people can do it. People can do it, and the best of those people try to make the trail easier for the next person. You know, the expression, pull up the ladder behind you. There's a lot of people that survive terrible times of strife and terrible times of economic uncertainty, and they're just like, well, I got mine, good, everything's fine now, and they forget how many others are struggling, and you seem like someone who's never going to give up your humanity and empathy for others. We have to try to make it easier, and I'm going to vote for whoever does it. And I'd love to see Democrats make this an issue, but I've never seen any political party make homelessness an issue. I've seen individuals in cities who are running for office talk about it, but never on the national level. And it's getting worse in our country, and we're going to have to do something about it, because you can't just say they're all drug dealers and turn your eyes to the truth forever.
Absolutely, because it's just not a fact.
Lynn, I love this call, and I'm so grateful to you for calling. Thank you so much for sharing a bit of your experience with us, and I'm so glad that you're doing better now.
Yes, sir, and I appreciate you, and I love your show, and keep doing what you're doing.
Oh, I'm sure I'll find a way to alienate you at some point. I do everybody else, but for now, thank you so much.